On December 10th, 2021, a violent tornado moved across western Kentucky, producing severe to catastrophic damage in numerous towns, including Mayfield, Princeton, Dawson Springs, Barnsley, and Bremen. Crossing through 11 counties of the Jackson Purchase and the western coalfield regions of Kentucky during its lifespan, the tornado was exceptionally long-tracked, traveling a total of 165.7 miles on the ground. It was the deadliest and longest-tracked tornado in an outbreak that produced numerous strong tornadoes in several states, with 56 fatalities confirmed. The second significant tornado in an exceedingly long-tracked tornado family. This tornado began just inside northern Obion County, Tennessee, just a few miles after another long-tracked EF4 tornado had dissipated in that same county. Welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters. David, Vicki, how are y'all doing today?
I'm doing well.
I am too. Doing pretty good.
This was a different situation, I think is the only way you can describe it, that most folks had probably not ever dealt with at some point in their life. Everybody has tragedies. We've all lived through storms. Most folks don't ever have the opportunity to lose everything they have.
Yeah.
And that's something that numerous families have experienced, not just in Hopkins County, where both Barnsley and Dawson Springs are located, but in all these counties, basically from Fulton to Ohio County in our part of the state. Lots of other counties affected as well. In my home county, Taylor County, there was quite a bit of damage. But hardly anywhere did we see the total destruction that we saw out of this storm as it did in a few places. So,
Jay, when I was down there helping one day, I think, for lack of a better word, what I said was when I actually got in the area where the damage was, I was dumbfounded. I mean, I didn't even have a better word because I've never seen any destruction like that. I've seen tornado damage in my county back several years ago, but nothing to the magnitude that it was in Hopkins County. And it's just, there's really no way to describe.
Yeah, I actually, one day I was up here helping Jay, we're getting some fencing together, and I actually got to talk to a young man from Muhlenberg County that they had lost everything. They had lost, you know, cattle, and they had lost family members and houses and, you know, fences, and didn't have any fences. And you know, and he was saying, he said, people were calling me, telling me my cows were out, but he said, I didn't have a place to put them. You know, I didn't have anywhere to get them up or anything like that. And I guess he was really the first person I actually talked to that went through it. And, you know, your heart goes out to those folks. I mean, it's just, it's
you
tough.
You can't really imagine it.
I mean,
you may have a storm come through and you may lose a part of a fence, but, yep. you go out there and you patch it and you fix it or whatever needs to be done. Or even if you have to move the cattle for a little bit, but when you have no fences,
yep.
I mean, just think about that.
Yeah,
No fences,
no barns, no
facilities,
no resources or working facilities.
Right.
And to couple that with the folks who lost even more, no home to live in.
Yeah.
As I heard several producers tell me, they cobbled together whatever they needed to overnight, maybe to take care of the cattle or in the first day or two, or what other livestock they might have had. I've had a sizable goat producer in my county that lost everything. But all of those things took a back door to making sure you had a roof over your head,
absolutely,
making sure you had a place for your family to be the
That's
next
right.
night. Because in this series of storms, as we all know, they came in on a Friday night, Saturday morning, early, depending on where you were, you know, as to what time you got hit before or after midnight. But 3 days later, by Wednesday of that next week, there were other strong storms coming in, bringing several inches of rain, brought massive flooding to a lot of localities in this area. And folks had to scramble just to get things covered, to get what little bit done they could in 2 or 3 days before the next round hit.
Yeah, and you know, your first reaction is going to be to take care of your family and to try to have a roof over your head or move your family to somewhere that they can be safe, and then you're going to try to come back and try to pick up the pieces. But, you know, I actually drove through Bremen, I don't know, it was several days after that, and probably weeks, actually. It was the first of January that I came through there, and, I mean, it was – they were still cleaning up, but, I mean, just the amount of destruction and the, you know, the total loss of homes and equipment and fences. And, you know, there was one guy there that had done some fencing, and, I mean, he didn't have any old fences left. There was nothing there. It was all new fences and to contain those animals. So it's pretty tough just to drive through there, and you can't imagine yourself having to go through that at all. We've done some stuff there at the house and built a lot of stuff, and you know, I can't imagine not having any of that or it being gone and not having a way, because we live right there on a major highway, and I can't imagine trying to keep those cattle out of the highway. Is
right,
that makes you lose sleep at night, really does.
I tell you too that I talked to a lady. It was actually my daughter actually works at a school with a teacher there at a school in Hopkins County, and she actually lived in Dawson, and she lost her home. Her daughter also lived behind her, and her daughter lost her home. And that, and you know, that's not the only situation. You know, I'm sure across the state with the devastation that it left, you know, a lot of families live in really close proximity to each other. And with this tornado, with the width of the tornado, how long it was on the ground, you know, you're talking about, there's families that not just one of them lost their house, two or three possibly lost their house. And so that really changed my way of thinking too, because, you know, we all think, you know, well, we'll just go to a family member's house and stay till we can figure this out. Well, some of the family members didn't have homes either.
Yeah, case in point, one family that I worked with there in the Dawson Springs area, a mother, her son, grown adult son, and her grown adult daughter, all three had homes on the farm. All three of them 100% loss on their homes, on their fences, on their barns. They lost every vehicles. They lost it all. They didn't have anything to start over with the next morning. Couldn't even, you know, had to borrow a vehicle to even work around to work with your neighbors and find out what was going on with other people. So
I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I think that tornado was the longest. It was on the ground longer than any tornado in history, if I'm not mistaken. If I think that's right.
165 miles, just a single tornado on the storm, on the ground, and it was not the only tornado in that group of storms.
Yep.
You go right to the south of Hopkins County into Christian County, where I live, actually. There was another set of tornadoes that come across the south part of that county. Part of the same storm system, but were not the same tornado that started in West Tennessee and ended on the Ohio River east of Louisville. Mm-hmm. It's a long, long way for a storm to be on the ground.
Yeah, and you know, you see over in the Mayfield area, the total destruction there, the Dawson area, some in Princeton, you know, the Research and Education Center, a complete total loss. I actually had some friends in there that were in the research center, because that's, you know, you think about a safe place to go when you automatically think about going.
Absolutely.
There. And so they were there, and to be real honest about it, hearing his story, I actually got to talk to him yesterday, and he kind of told the story. They're lucky to be alive. If they had not been exactly where they were during that storm, they would have not made it through.
That's exactly what his wife told me.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so we all know people that were affected by that storm. So, Jay, I know you dealt with a lot of it. from a recovery standpoint and trying to keep people afloat and going and doing, you know, what are some things that y'all did to kind of help us or help folks in your community kind of get through this?
Sure, David. You actually mentioned earlier working with me one day, and David, you and Vicki both have worked with me a lot of days, but you mentioned helping me distribute some fencing supplies. One of the things that kind of come out of this storm was the partnership between Kentucky Farm Bureau, the UK Cooperative Extension Service, and the Kentucky Department of Agriculture to help organize the collection and the distribution of any ag-related relief supplies. There's a lot of organizations that were working with personal care items and home-related items and just a lot of families that individually, you know, wanted to give to that. But there was no real mechanism before this partnership for the collection and distribution of ag supplies. So in this partnership, extension agents would go out into their counties. They would collect the needs from individual producers, and then weekly we put that list out to the Kentucky Department of Agriculture. They will distribute that list statewide, and folks have been working with Farm Bureau and other groups to donate items, and those items come into the county. They'll come to the extension agent, and then that person will try to get those things turned around and distributed. Here, and this is exactly the way it should be, so I don't want anybody to mistake and think that I'm complaining about this, because this is exactly the way it should be. While agencies were trying to figure out what they were going to do, people were out doing. And the people that turned out from multiple states away to come and be boots on the ground, to help people remove debris, to help in family recovery, in some instances, like I was involved with, body recovery. The willingness of people to get out of their own comfort zone and travel a long way to help people that they never met, may never see again, was just, it was heartwarming, to be quite honest. And those people brought supplies with them. Ones that were came from an ag background, they brought ag supplies. We had people come in from all across the state donating bagged feed, fence posts, fencing materials, you know, page wire, electric fence, solar chargers, you name it, people were bringing it in. They brought in tarpaulins, they brought in boxes of hammers, nails, anything that you might need that you would have lost to get yourself back up and running, folks had donated. And it's been overwhelming in a good sense to see that many good people out there and to see that many people want to do something for the right reasons.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of... give you a little bit of hope for humanity. I mean, it really does. I mean, you know, in the world we live in today.
One person said that at the end of that first week, a producer made the comment to me. He said, you know, I don't have a lot of faith in man. He said, but this week's made that just a little bit better.
Yep. And I tell you, too, even in where I live in the county where I work, you know, we wasn't affected directly by that. You know, right. We was just, you know, we didn't have any tornado damage. It didn't come through. But we were close. So, you know, we had folks that we'd worked with and of that nature. But immediately, as soon as this happened and word started getting out what was happening, you know, I had producers in my county calling, hey, what's needed? I've got... You know, I've got a Traco, I've got a Backo, I've got trailers, I can, you know, whatever, what needs to be done, I can do it. Just tell me where I need to go. Yep. And you know, that's just the thing, I think, in agriculture. I've said a lot of things, a lot of times that farmers in the ag community, they wear a lot of hats all the time. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, it's hard to describe what that is. But when a disaster like this happens, and Jay, I think that you'll be able to probably speak to this a little more, but when something like this happens, you don't have to ask the ag community, hey, can you come help me? They're going to be calling you first to say, how can I help? And well, that's exactly the way I felt that happened a lot.
Yeah, and that's to your point, Vicki, about they were calling you. That brings up a point that I wanted to make is that, you know, extension and extension agents are uniquely positioned to be able to facilitate a lot of the things that Jay actually did and
That's
that
right.
we actually went through. And you know, we were coordinating. I mean, we had people from all across the state sending supplies down here and coordinating those things. And folks that had ag damage were actually told to call the extension office.
That's right.
And so I hope that folks will, you know, you may not always get your information from the extension office, and you know your agronomic information, and that's fine. That's your, you know, whatever you like to do.
Sure.
But it would be great if you would support the extension service, because these are some services that we do provide from when we do have a disaster or we do have some other kind of issue come up. You know, the extension office, we've got one in every county, 120 counties in Kentucky, and we've got one in every county. And so that positions us uniquely to be able to facilitate those things. So I hope that folks will continue to support Extension, regardless of where you're getting your information from. You know, it we still need that support at the county level.
And right. It's a network, too. Just like with Jay, you know, Jay, it hit your county hard. I mean, it was devastating, the damage that was in your county. And, you know, like David and I, you know, we network together to be able to help you and, you know, and just to be able to split, because you can't do it all, but you've got a network of people through the extension office to say,
if you need help,
hey, yeah. I've got supplies coming in and they're coming in at the exact same time. Yeah. Can you go meet this one while I go meet to get this one unloaded?
And y'all were both there and available to do that. And I'll say it on air, how appreciative I am of that, how appreciative others are that you both and agents from other counties all stepped up in and around. Because of the nature of this storm taking a long track like it did, you had counties to the north and the south of it that were either unaffected or not nearly as affected as maybe what storms in the path or counties in the path of the storm were. So to have that network, to have that support group, if you will, of people working side by side was really, really valuable. Both of y'all were places sometimes when I couldn't be there. You intercepted calls and you know, we've learned to do a lot of things or maybe had to bring up skills we hadn't used in a long time. I'm a lot better forklift driver right now.
That's right.
Than I was a month ago.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
But that's kind of the way it's been, is you just do whatever you need to do at the moment to get this done. We talk about bringing all these supplies in. I want to be real forward in making sure I thank Nutrien Ag Supply in the state of Kentucky. I reached out to a person who I'd never met before. He didn't know me. I sent him a text message and told him who I was and said, I really need the use of one of your buildings that's in there in my community to be able to load out some of these supplies with. And their response over the phone was, do you need a forklift? Because they were immediately on board. Everybody knew what had happened, and everybody wanted to do what they could do. This was a person who wasn't near the destruction. He was several counties from here. But he knew what went on and knew that he could have a small part in helping, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it's a small world, Jay, because if I remember correctly, I believe I worked with the man that you're talking about when I was a crop consultant at Miles Farm Supply.
You did.
We didn't even know all of that when all this was coming together with that building. But as it turned out, it's a small world.
To be able to have those connections that you can turn around and call. You can call another ag agent or somebody else in extension, and they may have a connection with somebody that has something that you need, and you know, it's really good to be able to have that network of folks.
That's right.
To be able to call and get that information.
You know, case in point, I've got friends all across the state. I grew up in different parts of the state, so I've got close personal friends in and out of extension. And when the phone started ringing, a lot of those contacts that were calling me were those friends or extension agents from the far eastern part of the state saying, we want to help you. We want to send our stuff to where you are. What do you need? Yep. And that is really, really nice to have that type of network to rely upon. And that's something that extension really in any program area, whether it's family and consumer sciences or 4-H, there is a network professionals that are tied together one way or another. And it's almost like a chain. when you see the way people are linked from county to county to county. It really was a big help in this situation, and being able to help my people, help my producers, get turned around and start getting pointed back in the right direction.
And the and another on that line is, now you've been through this. If this happens again, the experience that you've had, and to be able to help those that may have to go through it later, we hope that doesn't happen, but we all know that disasters happen. We can't stop them. But just we learn from each other, and being able to know this worked really well, this did not. Because knowing what doesn't work is just as important as knowing what does work.
Yeah,
because that can really, if you can eliminate an obstacle for somebody else that didn't work, that's just going to make things smoother for everybody.
Yeah, we actually had a Zoom training just not too long after the, kind of in our first few days after the tornadoes had come through, and Dr. Craig Wood had put together a meeting and with some folks that had been through some flooding up in Eastern Kentucky, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of gave some pointers about, you know, what to expect and what, you know, what worked, what didn't work, and that thing. So you've got that network of people that have been through some of that stuff like you're talking about, Vicki. And, I mean, that was real helpful, I felt.
Very, very helpful. I know personally, just as a community member, aside from my role in Extension, when this happens again, and it will somewhere, I am far better equipped now to help others just because I've been through it myself. And personally, I had no damage. I had no damage to my property. I didn't lose a thing. But I work with a lot of people who did, and my role in working with them and helping them get back on their feet, I feel like has equipped me to help others the same way. That being said, I would love to see, now that we've had these type of disasters across Kentucky that Extension has been involved in, you take back, I think, 7-8 years ago, the tornadoes that were in the Morgan County area. The floods in southeastern Kentucky, all across eastern Kentucky just a couple of years ago. I would love to see some type of organized training for agents to be able to help us logistically when we face this the next time. We've gone through it a few times. As Vicki said, we know what works, we know what doesn't work, or maybe what doesn't work as well. I feel like there would be even more of a way that we could help people in our community, just because we have been through not only the community side of this, but now the logistical side of organizing donations coming from other places, being able to house those donations short term, because when they come in fast. Hopkins County started that week with a single emergency designated area for a storage of personal care items and supplies. By the end of the first week, we had 5 facilities where we were storing things. When we finally had to start asking people to slow down with their donations, we had 16 warehouses that were filled to capacity. And we were constantly putting these things out to people. But the outpouring of donations, the outpouring of love, if you will, were far exceeding the ability to turn around and get these things put back out. That's why I worked with Nutrien to get the warehouse. We had a temporary storage facility there in Madisonville, but we quickly outgrew what we would be able to do there. Plus, it was outdoors. Nothing was going to be inside. Vicki, you helped me with one of the feed distribution days. Yep. Well, David did too. Y'all both were there.
Yep.
And it was pouring down rain that day. Had we not had a covered roof,
cool,
at least, to work out of.
It was a little cool. It was a little cool.
Was it? Was it cold?
I know to you, Jay, it probably wasn't, but it was a little cool to me.
But, you know, it's great to have, because if I say there was something to happen in the county that I'm in, y'all are going to be the first call that I make.
Oh,
you know?
Same.
And I hope that y'all would
same
do the
way.
Same here.
Yeah.
So, you know, to have that network and be able to call close friends and people that are close in proximity to me to help me, I mean, that's a great comfort. For sure.
The one thing that I did notice, and I know you've noticed it more, Jay, is the folks that were directly affected. I mean, the folks that lost their homes or lost their fences, the top of their grain bins gone, whatever the case may be. Those folks, you're in shock there for a little bit. You don't even know what you need.
Yep.
I mean, it's like you've got to, you know, it's almost like you got to step back and see. And I think that's where you were instrumental too, Jay, with those producers too, is kind of knowing ahead of time what these folks are going to need, because right now they can't even think. I mean, you alluded to that. They're just trying to get their family in a house that's dry and some clothes that they can put on and some food in the cabinets.
I was seeing that, you know, every day in that first few days. You would reach out and try. You'd show up. And what can I do? What can I help? And folks didn't know.
They didn't.
They really were in such shock. And you know, 3 weeks later, I had a producer actually tell me one day when he was picking up fencing materials. He said, you know, he said, if you would have called me the first day or two after the storm, he said, I don't know that I'd answered the phone. He said, I kept having people show up at my house. He lived in the Barnsley area. He said, people kept showing up at my house wanting to help, and I was turning them away. He said, I didn't even realize what I needed. And finally, he said, I realized these folks are here to help me. I've got to find something for them to do. And he said, I wasn't trying to put them off. He said, I didn't even realize what kind of shape I was in until I was a couple of weeks removed from that initial shock.
And they didn't have any idea the amount of the donations that had been brought in either. They had no idea.
Well, and that was where, you know, like this nutrient warehouse, that's where it was so critical in this process. Ideally, when this system was set up between KDA and Farm Bureau and Extension, they wanted, as supplies came in, for them to be able to be trucked right to the farm where they go. I worked in areas in those first few days after the storm cleanup, you could barely get a pickup truck through, much less a truck or a trailer or, you know, heaven forbid, a semi. So we had to find something to do with some of these supplies on the early days, and a storage facility just made that work. It gave me the ability to have a central spot for trucks to come into. We unloaded. We categorized. Vicki, you helped with that in that first day. You met some of the first stuff that came into the warehouse when I couldn't be there. But we were able to organize the things. We could put together an inventory list, and then I could put that out to producers. And then once they got to the point where they could start thinking about what needed to be repaired, they could get in and do. One producer told me early on, this was the weekend of the storm, I reached out to him. I said, hey, we're going to be having some things come out. What can I get for you? And he said, if I had everything that I needed to rebuild sitting in my driveway, he said, I'm 6 weeks away from being able to use any of it just because of the cleanup efforts. And this was a monumental cleanup effort that had to be done. We have a lot of people who have put up temporary fence, but it's going to be springtime. They're going to have fitting weather before they can get track hose and other types of equipment in to clean up some of this storm damage. Where one guy told me he had roughly 180 acres under fence and cross fence. His fence didn't blow away. It was all covered by trees. And he said, I've got a creek out because of debris and because of trees in the creek. He said, I'm flooding right now. He said, so I'm going to be a couple months before I can do anything. Thankfully, you know, the rains have receded. We've had a little bit more fitting weather through January, and he's been able to do some cleanup, but it's still, he's farms in bottomland areas, and he's going to be a long way from getting most of that stuff cleaned up before he can go back with permanent fencing.
And that really shows you how long the cleanup effort is going to be. I mean, and how important it is for, you know, it's great for everybody to send stuff at the beginning, but, you know, it's kind of like a funeral, really.
Yes,
I mean,
you're
it's
right.
It's not the 4 or 5 days after, it's the weeks and the months after that really folks are going to need a lot of help still. And, you know, and hopefully folks will continue to be as generous as they have been.
I heard that same statement, David, made several times. I said it a couple times myself in that first week, that I hoped 3 months from now people were going to be just as generous with their time.
Yeah.
Because that's when people really were going to be out of the winter, we're going to be in a time where we can start some rebuilding. Now, folks hit just a little bit of a good fortune, I guess you could say, with the weather. That week of Christmas, we had 60-degree temperatures. It was dry. I had one guy got all of his fence put back up, permanent fence put in, over about a 3-day period. But he had a fencing crew, a volunteer fencing crew, actually two, one from Indiana and one from Alabama, that showed up and said, if you buy the materials, we'll put it up for you.
Yep.
And they were professionals. They knew what they were doing. They fenced in 3 days what it would have took a family probably 3 weeks, 3 weeks to,
that's
to
right.
do.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right, exactly.
And there again, that was one of the other donations. People showed up with equipment. People showed up with their hands and work gloves on, ready to, mm-hmm. to do things, and that was... It was big. It was very big.
Really, you know, was. One of the things about the disaster and when disasters happen, you know, it causes each one of us to think about, do we have enough insurance? Are we insured enough? You know, when something like this happens, I think that's something that we all need to remind ourselves and that's one way that we in Extension, I think, again, like you had talked about, we're kind of set up to network and kind of push information out. But this is a good time for us to remind folks, you know, to sit down with your insurance agent and make sure that you are covered. Make sure that you have that adequate coverage that you need for your house, you know, but not only that, your contents, your shops and your buildings, you know, your equipment. And, you know, it we all know this makes sense, that this is the right thing to do, but, you know, I'm going to dare say that most of us haven't done it. We really need to know the contents of what we have before a disaster happens.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things
I mean, really, I'm not trying to be sarcastic, but it's a great time to remind that we all need to go and get a piece of paper and write down what our contents are.
One of the things we always do on this show, if you've listened to our earlier episodes, is we offer a timely tip. Yeah. And that would be this week's timely tip, Vicki, is to everybody out there should take that opportunity to get with your insurance agent to make sure you have adequate coverage. And adequate coverage is something that may have been correct as far as your policy goes a year ago, But I'll give you some real numbers working with the producer who was telling me the other day. We've all heard about the supply chain disruption. We've heard about what lumber materials are and metal materials and things like that. One producer told me that on his shops and barns, just to replace them, that he's going to be $100,000 out of pocket because of the difference in lumber and material prices today versus the last time he went up and went over his insurance policy.
Well, if anybody's built anything in the last, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 months, whatever, I actually built a sled, calf sled, the other day. It's 16x8, and I had somewhere around $1,200 just in lumber. And, I mean, wow. I can't imagine building a barn or a house or anything, and you know, if you don't go through your insurance and check it yearly, and I actually talked to my insurance agent the other day and was just asking him how things were going, and he said, you know, it's made a lot of people that weren't affected by the storm to come back in and check on their coverage just because of all the stuff that had happened. I mean, it's a good reminder to, and like Vicki said, make a list of contents. Now, some of us who like to hoard stuff, you know, we have a hard time making that list, but I mean, we still need to try to make a list of the stuff that you want or could be replaced if it needed to be replaced.
And I talked to my insurance agent as well, and I hadn't thought about this, but he mentioned when you're getting your contents information together is to go ahead and write down model numbers and serial numbers to things too, because that can be really important and really helpful. Too, you know, you don't think about that. I mean, you know, I wouldn't have thought about that. I'm just thinking, get a notebook and start walking through and writing down. Mm-hmm. But having that information can be extremely helpful. And one of the other things that he mentioned too was to keep those important documents, make sure they're in a safe or something like that, but also have multiple copies of those and have those maybe outside of your home or, you know, somewhere else in a safekeeping, and even have electronic copies. So scan those in to, you know, a computer or something, or scan those somewhere where you've got multiple copies, because, you know, just like when you walked into the areas, Jay, that of the areas where you all were hit so hard. I mean, what I saw, I mean, it'd be hard to find anything. I mean, it was just decimated.
You know, vividly, I remember walking up to a house just asking if people needed help, and the house was gone. It looked to be somewhat intact, but it had been pushed completely off of the basement. And as we walked up to the house, we could see some people standing around, you know, closer to the building. We were going to walk up and ask them if we could help them. And as we got up to that basement, there's a guy standing in the basement. It's open air. He's got a filing cabinet, and he's going through his filing cabinet looking for his insurance policies. Vicki, you said exactly what I was going to say. Have a way to store those outside the home. I remember when I was a boy, we had it was common for people to have a lockbox at the bank, and that's a safety deposit box. That's where you kept insurance policies and kept deeds and titles to trucks and things like that. But with the cloud nowadays, that we all know somebody that would have the ability to scan a document in and store it for. Most of us can do it on our cell phones now. Mm-hmm. We've got that ability. You can take the notes section, you can take a picture of something, make a PDF, and it's stored on your phone and in the cloud for forever. As long as you pay your phone bill, I guess.
That's right. And another tip, too, is make sure you know how to shut, you know, if you need to, make sure you know how to shut your water off or your gas off.
Yes.
You know, electricity, whatever. Know where those shutoffs are in your home and make sure that everybody in your home knows. You know, because it's common, I think, for maybe, you know, one person in the family to know where all of that is. But it, maybe our older children, we haven't told them yet. Yep. But take the time to let them know, you know, because it's important to get that shut off.
Absolutely.
If we need to, it's,
I mean,
just
that creates a dangerous situation.
Yes.
That, and you don't think about that, you know, when we're talking about the tornado coming through, but, you know, exposed gas lines or even propane tanks that, you know,
that's
the
right.
valve is on, you know, the kids right. and other folks, older kids, I guess, and other adults need to know how to shut
how
that
to
off,
shut it off
or is it safe to shut that off? So there's a lot of safety concerns that go along with a disaster as well.
It's very important with a propane tank. If you're on a natural gas system or your electric or your water, you need to know how to shut those things off at your meter. But more than likely in a catastrophe as big as, say, what Dawson Springs had, there's going to be main shut off far away from there, and it's not going to be one of the earliest that the storm recovery people could get in. They were actually hampered by being able to work in some of those areas until all of the utilities were shut off and they knew that they didn't have gas leaks and things like that going on. So,
yeah, and, you know, electrical lines being down and those type things, those create, you know, situations that if you're not sure how to handle that, you probably need to back up.
Well, there's just a lot of hidden dangers
sure.
when you start thinking about stuff like that, yeah. just glass and nails and then your, you know, electrical lines. Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads me into a thought of, you know, I think we as humans, when something happens to our neighbors, something happens to our family, our family's friends, and, you know, it's our instinct, I think, for a lot of us to want to help. We want to help. We want to physically help. But there's a time and a place for us, for people to help. And it's appreciated, but at the same time, the day after it happens might not be the time that you need to be out there trying to help. That needs to be facilitated with your emergency management type folks and other folks, key people that's in those counties, because we all know a little bit of help is good, but sometimes having too many people trying to help just kind of clogs the system up, so
yeah,
to speak.
Absolutely. Hinders
and so,
help.
Yes,
to,
and so
to,
just,
to the right people.
You know, just know that if you do want to help, that's great. But there's a lot of ways you can help without being there right in where in that tornado zone. You can help in a lot of different ways and be just as useful.
Let's use Dawson Springs as an example. Folks would call the extension office or other places and say, we want to go help. What can we do? And we would have to turn people away. My county judge told me, he said, encourage people not to come around. A, they're trying to reduce the amount of sightseers, you know, because everybody wants to see something like that. But they actually had the National Guard have the town blocked off, all the roads going in and out. And a lot of people were upset. They said, we want to go in and help. You know, why are they keeping us out? I mentioned earlier the 56 fatalities that occurred because of this storm across the breadth of it. 14 of those fatalities were in Dawson Springs proper. And in those first few days, the emergency management personnel were still in a body recovery mode. It wasn't an idea of we want to go in and we need to help, you know, so-and-so bag up their clothes. That needed to be done. But while they were still in a body recovery mode, and I hate to say that like that, that sounds morbid, but that's exactly what it was. While they were in that mode, you need to be respectful of people's personal space. They may have lost loved ones. Let them get that done. And then as soon as they could, they opened the doors and started allowing folks to come in. Now, I went in and out of Dawson probably 30 times that first week. I got stopped by the National Guard a few times. They'd look at my driver's license, but they could also, I also had a truckload of supplies or people that, you know, we were going for a designated purpose to help an individual. They never turned me away a time because they knew, you know,
what I was. Well, you were instrumental in opening roads up with your chainsaws and, mm-hmm. you know, just having that, you know, you were, it was fortunate for Hopkins County for you to have that experience, but and having that equipment and being able to put that to use. I mean, you never even batted an eye. You just knew that you just picked that stuff up when you came to Madisonville because you knew that was going to be needed. And I think you being removed a little bit and it wasn't happening to you, you had just a little bit clearer mind on what was going to be needed rather than somebody right in it.
And two, you, and I hate to say this too, but I mean, you have that looting problem
yes.
that they had. And I actually talked to one of the guys at the Princeton Research and Education Center, and he said it at daylight the day after, he said there were people out there scavenging around trying to get stuff. And I mean, so you have that problem in that whole issue too. So, you know, hopefully some of those things, you know, we get those things out of the way, and then maybe people can go in and start.
And the National Guard said exactly that. They said, you know, we're going to let you through. We're trying to keep out looters and sightseers, and, yep. and they knew that I wasn't either.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a when you don't know what else to do, you can always do the one thing you know. And running a chainsaw is something that I yep. know, and that was something I was able to do just right from the beginning. To get into some places, we had to cut our way into some places, and that's just what you do,
yep.
you know.
That's
yep.
right.
So, well, I think we've about reached our time. We've covered a topic, to me, pretty well as far as just the initial gut reactions of what's going on and what happened. I think both of you would agree we could make several shows out of
sure.
actual response to a storm or Absolutely. Planning before a storm. Mm-hmm. And we may hit on some of those things in subsequent issues. But right now I want to say thanks to our hosts, Vicki and David, for this week's conversation. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and hopefully have learned a little bit about this tragedy that we've experienced in December of 21. And we'll make plans to join us again for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.